Welcome to the Round 6 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus. I'm in a bloody fantastic mood, and I'm joined again by FB Donkey this week.
I can't imagine why, mate. Welcome to the show. How are you going this week?
I'm one of the few guys out there without Fife, and that's the main discussion point for the week this week. Fife injured, so got a little bit lucky, and we'll get into our score updates very shortly, and then that'll probably extend the reasons behind why I'm so happy. Before we do, just a shout out again to our community for your questions on social media this week. Don't forget that you can post your questions to us on a Tuesday at Supercoach Coach on Twitter and at facebook.com/supercoachcoach. That's where we draw our inspiration from each week. And this week's main topic is the injury to Fife, unfortunately for Fife owners. And we'll look at some rookies as well as some underperforming premiums like Bartel and Jesse Lonergan. So we'll jump straight into the score update now that we've mentioned the brief rundown for the show this week. Mark, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. So I scored 20-67 this week. I thought I was doing quite well until Sunday, and then Fife got injured. And then on Monday as well, I had Day and Parrish on the field, which didn't really get it done. I had also had Fife captain. That was probably obviously the biggest thing for the week. Sometimes you just have weeks like that, unfortunately. I had Ablett as the vice, so I didn't have the Goldstein option. Yeah, just kind of turned to poo, but I guess it's all right because I didn't drop too far in the rankings. How did you go, mate? I'm guessing a little bit better than that.
Things finally worked out for Team Supercoach Coach, and it's been 4 weeks of losing to you, Mark. So I'm happy to say I've finally pipped you this week. I had a fairly massive one, all things considering. Scored 22.89 for the round. Quite a bit above par for the week, and that allowed me to leapfrog you, Mark, in 1 week. Those 4 weeks of deficits just wiped out. Just get out of there. Because I caught up over 200 points this week, and now I'm sitting in the top 10,000. I could not be more excited. I only just have caught up, but no Fife was obviously a big one. I got the captaincy on Dangerfield, Menzel's been great since he's come back into the team, scored 89. Toby Green scored 129, and people are considering trading him in now. Barlow, 128. Even Ollie Wine scored 128. A lot of my PODs, they just managed to fire this week. So no complaints from me, and sitting pretty happy. I'm ranked above you now, Mark.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I think we're going to change it to whoever wins the most weeks this year, not ranking. It's the new system. Well done, mate. I think probably got a bit lucky not starting Fife there. Made a bit of a mistake and get a reward for it.
I mean, look, he was averaging, I think, 118 over the first four rounds. So, I mean, he still hadn't hit his average. So I don't know if it was necessarily a mistake. It was really risky, and I'm not sure it was working out necessarily to my advantage. I don't feel like I was losing out a massive amount. Having said that, I definitely acknowledge that I wanted to trade Fife in. But, you know,
unfortunately, a lot of people did trade him in last week, which would be pretty painful. It was pretty sad to see him sitting there at halftime, and I think like the chances of that happening, dear captain, where they just pull them out of the game at halftime is pretty low. But yeah, we'll move on and we'll look for options. I guess this is a chance for myself and all the other Fife owners to take advantage and pick another midfield premium that you like that's had a good start to the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm feeling very fortunate I don't have Fife in my team because I have 369,000 sitting in the bank, and it's sat there for a little while now, this reserve cash. A lot of people would have recommended moving that cash upwards a bit earlier, so very, very fortunate I didn't end up with Fife. And like you said, Mark, we'll look to options for Fife owners this week. That's the main topic of discussion. And fortunately enough, there's some high-scoring premium midfielders to choose from this year. There's still quite a few blokes averaging 120 plus, which we don't always see after five rounds. So looks like there's some good players in form at least. Don't forget though, before we kick on to the show, we are an independent podcast and we'd really appreciate your support. $1 a show is all we ask. patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you have a spare buck and appreciate the show and can donate. You can jump on there. And as always, a massive thank you to our Patreon supporters so far.
Yeah, we hit 50 Patreons this week, which is pretty awesome and is really helpful for us with the show going forward.
Mm-hmm. Definitely appreciate it. So we haven't done this every week so far this year, but we'll do it this week. And that's an update for our Supercoach coach group. So the top score for the week was from the Hopefuls at SCT. He scored 23.36, so a monster round from him. I think I didn't even make the top 10 scorers for the round in our Supercoach coach group, so there were a few blokes that had a really strong round this round. And the leader for our Supercoach coach group is Here I Go Again, or Tim, and he's ranked 7th mark, so top 10 in the comp. That's Here tough. I Go Again.
That's one.
He had Captain Fife, so 21.29 is a very good score considering that, and hopefully you bounce back from that after you trade Fife out from your team. Tim?
Yeah, to hold on to top 10 with Fife as captain, that's pretty awesome.
Mm. All right, so main topic for the week, let's just get straight into it, Mark. Michael Angelo Iskander asking for trade-in options for Fife. The number one option he's listed here is Parker, and so have a lot of people out there in the community. And fair enough, he is the second highest averaging midfielder at the moment, behind only Patrick Dangerfield, averaging 125 from the season, just scored another 129 the weekend. So his lowest two scores are 92 and 116 for the season. Sydney are winning plenty of games, and he certainly looks back to that best and fairest type winning form that we know from Parker. What are your thoughts on Parker?
I guess he's a bit tricky. He seems like the kind of player that could go on a really good patch of form. We haven't seen him do it for a whole season before, but that doesn't mean that he's not capable, because he's capable of those really big scores. And if he can get rid of the sort of sub 80 scores that he sometimes gets, then he could definitely average pretty well this year. I think not a lot of people expected Sydney to finish top two, but that seems fairly likely at the moment. All their guns are firing and pretty good all across the ground, and got a couple of youngsters into the team that are doing all right. So look, I think Parker and Hanbury are both pretty good selections. I find it pretty hard to split those two, to be honest. Parker's that little bit cheaper, 40,000 cheaper, but Hanbury probably seems a little bit more reliable, even though he might not have quite the same ceiling as Parker. So I think that they're both pretty good picks, and if you don't have a Sydney gun midfielder in your team yet, then I'd probably lean towards bringing one in this week.
As I have favoured most of this season, I have Hanbury ahead of Parker, and so I'd probably stick with Mr. Consistent. Hasn't scored below 100, priced a little bit more, but I have him as one of the competition's best midfielders. So even though Parker's absolutely gunning it, he's only 7 points average ahead of Hanbury, and I think Hanbury hasn't had, you know, absolute monster games yet, which he's certainly capable of as well.
But I think his monsters aren't quite as big as Parker's. Like, Parker can tear a game apart, as we saw in round one. I think he got about 160, whereas Hanbury's monsters are more the 140 mark. So that might potentially cap Hanbury's ceiling a little bit, just potentially. But I mean, they're both really, really good options. Yeah, Hanbury's high score last year was 148, which he got a couple of times.
Certainly a fair consideration. I think given a choice between the two, it does feel a little bit like flipping a coin. Joel Selwood is the next player to talk about. He's in only under 16,000 teams, of course, having no preseason. He hasn't been very highly selected, but certainly he presents value as well, considering he has had no preseason. A starting average of 112 over the first five rounds certainly seems like a good return. He scored 142 with a career-high 14 clearances in round three, and last round against Port Adelaide, he had a score of 144 with 11 clearances as well. So does seem to be thriving with a bit of reduced pressure. Attention is going to Dangerfield. He's the one that copped that big knock in the back before the brawl erupted on the weekend. So thoughts on Selwood, Mark?
Yeah, I think that before the Port game, you would have been fairly concerned with him, because he did have that 70, and he did only the one big game out of four, and did seem to be sort of struggling a bit in some of those games. But then the big one on the weekend just sort of shows what he's capable of this year. And I know that Geelong's draw is still pretty decent. I think they've got the Lions this week, is it? Or is it the Suns down at Skilled?
Suns.
Yeah, he already had the big game against the Lions. So I think that Danger is the perfect foil for him, because it means that they're not all just crashing into Selwood at every centre bounce, and they're not tagging him every week, which has probably been his downfall in the past few seasons in regards to Supercoach scoring, is just those really low games when he gets tagged out. So look, I think Danger is brilliant for him. And my still concern is still his body and how his foot is going to hold up, because, I mean, he's got pretty good durability. He seems to be able to play through pain, but pretty significant issue that he had over summer, which did keep him out of training. So, look, still some concerns there, but his upside is huge, and you'd never really want to bet against Selwood, I guess.
He's my number one pick this week. I mean, I brought him up before his 144. Obviously, I'm a little bit more biased as a Geelong supporter, but based on his history. I mean, he fits into a bit like the Pendlebury mold when we picked him up early in the season. They've just shown exposed form above what you're currently paying for them, and therefore, because they're one of the most consistent, highest quality players in the AFL, they're quite easy to select. So, yeah, he would probably be my top choice for the week. The next guy that we want to talk about is actually another Collingwood player, Steele Sidebottom. I just mentioned Pendlebury before. Steele had an absolutely massive one over the weekend. He scored 166. He missed rounds 2 and 3, so this is only his third game for the season. He's priced at 578,000. We've seen Steele Sidebottom in the past averaged around the 115 mark. What are your thoughts on him?
He had 3 goals in the first quarter and completely dominated the Bombers. I'm really unsure. I think his form is going to depend a lot on what happens with Collingwood. And if they actually do seem to find some form and start winning some games, then he's quite capable of averaging 110 to 115. If they don't, then the fact that they've got so many other players in that midfield to share points around could just hold him back a little bit. I think you are really gambling on Collingwood's form with Steele. He can go through really hot patches. I think we probably haven't seen the best of Steele, so he could potentially average high 115s. Look, I think he's probably a pretty decent pick if he can stay out on the park. There's just a few ifs around Steele where I would have Hannabury, Parker and Selwood ahead of him.
Yep, I don't think I would be selecting a Steele Sidebottom type considering Collingwood's start to the season. Look at Scotty Pendlebury, who we all rate really highly. He's averaging 107. Treloar, we're all expecting a lot with his move from GWS, and he's only averaging 105 at the moment. So I think there's a little bit of a concern in regards to the Collingwood players stealing points in a team that doesn't win as many games. Certainly, if it's an issue at Sydney, it'll be an even bigger issue at Collingwood. Not the biggest fan of that selection, and that does bring us to Pendles, who I just mentioned earlier on. Now, he scored 131 on the weekend, and that's prompted a few people to ask, well, if we don't have Pendlebury, is it time to bring him in? To that, I would probably still be quite tentative on that, Mark. How about you?
I think I'd be more inclined to actually do it, because we did see Pendle play a lot more midfield minutes on the weekend, and Collingwood won. So you would hope that Buckley would think, okay, Collingwood are better with Pendles in the middle. I don't think that's too hard to work out. But so I think priced at 580,000, I don't really see him having much of a downside. He's still been very close to Collingwood's top scorer in every game. It's just that they haven't really been getting the wins on the board to get those extra points into their team. Yeah, I think Pendles is an absolute gun, and at 580,000, I would put him on the same level as the Selwood, Parker, Hannabrys.
I'm still pretty tentative, and I probably have him in a similar bracket to Steele. Tempting, but I probably would refrain personally.
Have you got him in your team?
Yeah, I do have Pendlebury in my team, and I've considered trading him. Like, I mean, you can't really, because it's Scotty Pendlebury. You're not side-swapping Scotty Pendlebury, but the temptation's been strong. How about Matthew Prittis, Mark? He's had a 79 and 87 in two of his last three scores, and that's brought his price down 34,000 from his starting price. So potentially present some value now.
How can you fault Prittis? Like, he seems to be a really solid, reliable pick, except for the fact that he missed last week or the week before. He's generally been really durable in the past. He consistently posted 112 average the last couple of years and seems more than capable of doing that again. West Coast should have a pretty good year this year again. He's not an exciting pick, but he seems to get it done every week.
At the same price point, I'd probably have him ahead of Steele and Pendlebury. That's probably where I sit, but still below, you know, Selwood and the Sydney Blokes. But having said that, yeah, he seems fairly safe for 110, and based on that price point, it's pretty good value after dropping that 35K. Callan Ward, how about him, mate? I see quite a few people in the community thinking about him. He's averaged 115 for the season so far. Always shown high scoring potential in terms of his clearance numbers, but never quite broke out into that top eight bracket. Do you think this year could be the year for him?
I mean, he has averaged 112 before. I don't think he's going to become one of those 120 averaging midfielders, so I would have him blow some of the others. I think he is a good point of difference pick. But he got 90 on the weekend, so not amazing in a win against the Saints, but maybe in some of those tougher games he will actually score a little bit better because he loves the contested ball. He's had 2 big scores, but he's also had 2 scores below 100 already, so it's a bit difficult to get into that really, really top bracket of premium mids if you're having those scores below 100. Even if they're not too far below 100, you really can't have 2 out of 5. Look, I think he's still a really good pick, and I think he's probably more in the steel side bottom category than in the top group.
I agree with that. He's in under 10,000 teams. I think for his potential, that seems like a fairly good POD. So if you're after a POD, that he would certainly rank right up there, but I don't think I'd have him at the Selwood level and Hanbury level.
I did strongly consider him when I was trading out Rockliffe early in the year, so I am a pretty big fan of the pick.
Mm-hmm. I think you've picked him in seasons past as well, Ward.
Yeah, I picked him when he was a mid-pricer at the Bulldogs the year before he left.
Mark Blitzarves is another guy that we've got a question about. He's dropped 17K this last week because of his 51 cycling in his price movements from round four. His break-even still high with a 146 this week, but at 532,000, could he be a decent buy? I mean, he's scored above 115 in four out of the five rounds. And last year, he did hit premium numbers, like good enough to play in your midfield, although not in the top eight mids.
I've asked you about him as well. I actually thought about bringing him in a few weeks ago. And I'm glad he didn't after the 51. I think the fact that he's getting so many third man ups, he's just playing like a roaming midfielder with insane durability for a team that has a really good draw. I guess my concern would be, can he average big numbers behind Danger and Selwood? That's probably my biggest concern for him. Other than that, I think he's got the potential. The fact that he won Geelong's Best and Fairest last year just shows that he has the potential to, I think, go even higher. I still think that we're seeing an improving Mark Blitzarves, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him average 110. So out of the cheaper guys, I think he's a pretty decent pick.
I think my only reservation with Blitz is that even though he's consistent because he has scores in every category, kicks, hit-outs, tackles, goals, what he has in terms of consistency, he perhaps lacks a little in terms of upside. Even though he was best and fairest winning midfielder last year, he only scored above 135 once for us last season. And he just doesn't get absolutely massive disposal counts. I think he's always contributing to the game, but I think he only had more than 25 possessions. The amount of times he did that last year, you could count on one hand. And that's a little bit of a concern when you're talking about whether or not he could break out into that next level of scorer. Having said that, though, I think 50 is clearly an aberration for him. He hasn't done that all season last year, and so this would be, you know, a low score over the last couple of years even. Faz brought him in a couple of weeks ago and probably jinxed him with that 51. So,
did he bring him into the rucks or the mid?
The midfield, and then I think he's now pivoted him into the rucks potentially.
I guess he does give you that flexibility that if, say, Nick Nat goes down with an injury, you don't have to trade Nick Nat to a ruck. You could actually trade him to a midfielder at some point later. It's not a huge advantage, though.
All right, we'll move on to the last midfielder I want to talk about, and that's Rory Sloan. In and out of our teams last year, we've seen him average 110-plus in the past. Without Dangerfield in the side, he doesn't seem to be too affected by it so far. I mean, he's only averaging 102 to start the season, but at the same time, I don't feel like he's been severely tagged out of any games as well.
Which I think was the concern in the preseason going in.
So, all things considering, you know, like if he just hasn't shown the upside to his game so far, and considering Adelaide are looking like a team that are in the top eight, potentially pushing a top four, would you consider Sloan? He's in under 10,000 teams and priced under 550K.
I probably would actually have him ahead of Blitzarves. Just Adelaide's form looks awesome. The fact that he's gone 96, 81, 92, 137, 103, there's a reason why he's cheap, and that's a bit concerning, but he's definitely got the potential to go on a big run, and we've seen that in the past, that the next 8 weeks he could score over 110. Like, he definitely has the huge potential at that price point. I mean, you're looking at a player in their, ninth season in a team that should finish top four, and they're the gun mid for that team. That's a pretty good deal.
I think I'd probably have him, you know, in that second rung together with, you know, the Wards, Pendle, sidebottoms that I mentioned so far, but I'd probably have him close to the top of that pile. So I do like his upside like you do, Mark. I think that the fact that he's only averaged 102 to the season probably stop a lot of people going to him as well. So he'll continue to be a POD, whereas a lot of the other players will have their selection numbers boosted a little bit. Yeah, I think he's certainly underrated heading into this trade talk period. There hasn't been much discussion about Sloan.
I think that the fact that people brought him in twice last year. Shows that he definitely has the potential to be a gun Supercoach player, but there might not have been a lot of talk about him because people were just feeling pretty burned after that. But, I mean, the way that the scoring works, it could easily be that Parker's had a great first 5 weeks and Sloan's had a slow first 5 weeks, and that could reverse over the next five very easily. That sort of is something that would happen on a regular basis, that people get off to hot starts and then slow down, and people get off to slow starts and then heat up.
Definitely agree with that. And it's about holding your nerve and picking some blokes that sometimes don't look like they're performing too well but can turn it around. Mark, this is an interesting question before we move on to one mid-price selection for five. Chester from Twitter has a question about Rockliffe as a five replacement. Now, he's dropped 45,000 after playing that one game last round and returned to the side in round five. His break even still 165, so he can plummet even more. But at 505,000, would you consider him?
No, not this week. The fact that we haven't even seen him score 100 this year, coming off a very limited preseason where he had some soft tissue injuries in the preseason and then picked up another injury, that's why I traded him out instantly, because he just didn't look like he was quite there. We saw in the back end of last season, in those last five or six rounds, why everyone wants Rockliffe in their team, because he does have that huge ceiling. So I definitely would consider him again, but I would actually like to see at least one decent score out of him before I brought him in.
Yep. Mark Murphy, David Siddles is wanting to ask whether or not he would potentially be worth the price.
Is it 2012?
He's in under 2,000 teams, which
for
is...
For good reason.
Yeah, for good reason.
He
scored a 36 in round four. At this price point, he could do a Zaha Rocket.
No. Sorry. If you watched the game on the weekend, his first quarter was insanely good, especially seeing as he had a fairly interrupted build-up to that game. I'm just concerned that, maybe this is his year, that Brendan Bolton brings everything back out of Mark Murphy, but as someone that you're well aware that I was a massive mm-hmm. Mark Murphy fan mm-hmm. in back 2012 sort of period, and then just progressively just got burned, and he just didn't ever live up to the hype that you would expect from such a gun player. So, look, he could return to form. I think that he's had some issues with fitness over the preseason, and then he's already had issues during the season. So, despite how good he has looked at times, the fact that he plays for Carlton and has got some pretty serious injury concerns means that even at 440, I've still got too many concerns to bring him in at that price. It's not that much more expensive to go to Rockliffe and then a little bit more to like actual proper premiums.
I think I'd agree with that. I mean, under 400K, I can understand taking him as a stepladder. But like you said, at 440, at 110K more, which you can easily hit with a rookie, you can turn him into a proper premium. So if the differential was significant and he was, 350K and had potentially 250K value in him, I mean, even that seems like a bit of a stretch. Potentially 200K value, you might consider him. But at that price point, it's not actually attractive enough.
I'd love to pick him and him to do awesome in my team. Like, I actually really used to like Mark Murphy.
You did.
I really want an excuse to pick him, and I want an excuse to like him again, but it's just not happening at the moment.
Last question about the five trade. At Seeker Supercoach is wondering, if you're looking to already, do a double downgrade and upgrade this week, and then you got dealt with a five injury, would you consider maybe holding five for a week? So let's say you wanted to wait on a Sloan type or a Rockliffe type. Would you potentially do your down and up somewhere else on your field and carry five into the next week?
Yeah, potentially, I think. If you have a real good downgrade target that you like this week and you really want to bring that cash onto the field, I don't see a huge issue with that. I mean, you could, seeing as Fife is like going to be out for quite a while, you could maybe bring Fife into that trade where you're downgrading Fife in that situation instead of someone else if that other person doesn't have a break even that's too high. I think that, Fife, you don't have to trade Fife out this week, sure.
Yeah, you just reorder it, but you'd definitely be looking at using him in a sequence of trades that ends in him being traded out next week, you would have thought. And I think you'd hold off on 1 week if you can find a more desirable trade, but you wouldn't just leave too much cash in there for multiple.
That'd be like leaving 300,000 on the bench.
Oh, and then still getting lucky and beating Mark. Yes. We get Crouch back this week. Oh, so sweet. So
did you keep Crouch?
Yeah.
You were the worst at this game.
Oh, yeah. Roll the dice, get rewarded. All right. That's it for the five discussion, Mark. Just to wrap it up, can you give me a top three options for five?
Now I'm looking into Mark Bloody Murphy. I've got me a bit excited. couldn't do it. Parker Hannabury and Salwood. I definitely add Pendlebury to that group, though. I think that if you don't have those guys, they would be my top four. I think that there's a few people out there without Ablett. Would you add Ablett into the same group, or the fact that he's a little bit sore at the moment, you'd have him not in there? Or
I would have Ablett in that group. I think he's averaging 120 for the season so far. I mean, it's not superb. It's not the Gary Ablett we know, who's clearly the best player in the league. I don't think he's at that sort of level at the moment. But having said that, he's still averaging 120, even though we're not totally enamored by his current state of play. The only way is up, I sort of feel, with him. I don't see him petering out too much more from this point.
So your top three from the ones we talked about?
From the ones we talked about, I would have Selwood number one, Hannabury number two. He's been my the midfielder I've wanted the most outside of my team for the entire season so far. And then I would actually have Sloan as my third sort of POD. I think Ward gets pretty close to that. This is just like one unique player. If you wanted to take a pod, I do think Sloan has that potential. And Adelaide are looking like they're looking seriously good, which is I didn't anticipate them playing as well as they have so far. So last question. Just before we move off the midfielders, now we've talked about him multiple times and neither of us are that crazy about the selection, but you know, let's just mention it because we've been hammered pillar to post about him. Sammy Mitchell, 597,000, averaging 120 for the season. I don't know. He scored 87 on the weekend off like 30 something disposals. I mean, it's not really for me. Could you see him breaking into your top three sort of candidates?
Not personally. For the same reasons that we talked about Jared White like that last year. Look, if they're in their 30s and they haven't done it before, then why would they do it in their 30s? Can happen, could definitely happen, but it just seems less likely than it is likely.
Yeah, I think the only reason that he could potentially improve at this point is because Hawthorn are still a really good team. They still win a lot of football, but they haven't replaced as much of their midfield depth. They've got a lot of good forwards and backmen in their team, but the midfield's arguably where they're a little bit light. So you could argue that he's absorbed some of the points, like even Lewis was a candidate for you last year, Mark. Yeah.
And part of the thing is that he's not playing backline anymore, which they put him in the backline for quite a while for his usage. But yeah, like you said, he's still very much a midfielder this year, which I mean, it could be a role change and it could be awesome for him. But like, he's got a highest average of 113 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So it'd be pretty surprising if he got his highest average ever at his current age. Yeah. I mean, he could play another 5 years. Mitchell is an absolute gun of the competition, absolute gun. But he will get tagged at some point. I think that 115 is about as high as you could hope for.
Yeah, and I mean, we've copped a bit of flack for not recommending Sam Mitchell and him continuing some good form, but I think, you know, we've got to take a position. If you say every player that's played awesome is going to continue playing awesome, you're going to make some wrong calls over the course of the season. And I think 87 points off, like, top disposals in the game kind of speaks a little bit to what we were talking to. So I think if there was any time to have the discussion after round five was probably a decent time for us to push our point across, Mark. At 600,000, it just seems too risky. All right, we're off the Fife replacement options now, off these premium midfielders. And of course, you could trade Fife for, you know, a backline or a four-line player. But, you know, at this stage of the season, you tend to suggest that you replace a like for a like. You don't want to be putting an extra rookie on field in certain positions because theoretically, you've got the good ones lined up on field. But definitely be people in certain situations that would be trading for a forward or backman instead. But we can't go through all the upgrade options, obviously. Rookies, Mark, is the next topic up for discussion. The first one that I want to cover are the rookie outs. So potential outs for the week. I've got Menadue here that I wanted to mention, even though he hasn't gone up too much in price. And then Paul Maltman, he asked about Ben Kennedy and Graham Price. On Twitter, he asked about Wietering and D, whether or not it's time to trade them out. So Menadue, Wietering, D, and Kennedy are the blokes, to my eye at least, that look like they're the most likely trade out targets for the week. Scan your eye through those, Mark. Any comments?
Sure. So, I mean, looking at my team, probably similar. I'd be very reluctant to get rid of Wietering at this stage because till the weekend, his scoring has been pretty close to premium scoring. Like, I would think he would be very close to my last upgrade. Maybe Sam Carriage is in a very similar boat. In the back line, I guess, starting at the top price-wise, Matty D, he had his first real down game on the weekend. He's had two quite good games and three lower games, but his first game in the 40s this weekend against Collingwood, where all the Bombers sort of sucked. So unless you expect that to happen every week, I wouldn't read too much into that. I still really haven't seen him miss a target. So I think if he holds his spot, I'd be keen to keep him in there. We've got the Carlton this week, and if he does get a few possessions, he scores really well because he seems to have time every time he has the ball and just always seems to make a good decision and or maybe go safe, but he always seems to hit his kicks. So I'd probably look to keep them if I could. Matty D's break even's about 67, so he could definitely make that this week. But with that said, he's probably close to the top of his price range. But those other two boys, Ben Kennedy and Menadue, probably trading them out interests me a little bit more. What do you reckon?
I think that of the four blokes, to be honest, D is actually the one that I'm looking most likely at trading out. I think Wietering, like you said, one of the last players that you'd probably be trading out. Menadue, I think, is probably the next most tempting after D. But the problem is he's priced at $210,000 and he started at $150,000. So you haven't extracted much value out of him at all. And then Ben Kennedy is the last one. And even though he's scored under 70 3 weeks in a row, I just think that his potential upside is higher than D. So if I were choosing between trading out a Kennedy or D, I'd rather trade out D, who's already 20k more expensive and I'd argue has lower top end scoring potential, and a lot of the time it's the absolutely massive scores that can help dictate big price movements. Yeah, I'm actually sitting on D being my number one trade candidate out of those guys. Kennedy second, third Menadue, and then fourth Wietering.
I mean, that all makes sense. I think that personally I'd probably have more faith in Matty D scoring extra points on my field. Just the fact that the rookies are on the field, I think, makes a little bit of difference as well. Whereas, like, so Ben Kennedy, he might get those hundreds, but he seems to me more likely to get those lower scores as well. So I guess it'll be interesting to see whether Kennedy keeps his spot this week, because he did have a great first couple of weeks, but his form since then has been pretty concerning, just in the sense that Melbourne have a few other players to come in, like Petrarca should at least get a game this week, and a lot of the other young guys are actually playing some pretty good footy, so it'll be really interesting to see what happens there. We are getting to the stage where we're going to have to start culling some rookies. Mm-hmm. Ben Ken and D are probably the first ones to come up. I totally agree on Menadue. I'm just hoping that he's something like Camden McIntosh last year, where Richmond just realised they have to get games into him and they just play him every week throughout the year, and hopefully he spikes a big one somewhere near the middle of the year.
Mm-hmm. They're certainly tracking that way to play youth. So
yeah.
Now we'll move on to the outs and ins. So these are guys that we got questions about who we feel are the most pressing to discuss each week. Again, a massive thank you to our community for your questions. Unfortunately, we can't address them all, but we'll just go through what we can. So first question is from at MTown Ballers. Like to hear your thoughts on Bartel. Not looking good so far. I think it's unfortunate. Fairly skeptical he's going to average 100 from here. But having said that, Mark, it doesn't look like he's going to be scoring in 30s or 40s either. I just don't think that he's quite at that premium level, and it looks like age has caught up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm really regretting my selection on Bartel, and very tempted to be trading him. But as we saw with Barlow on the weekend, you should probably just hold fit premiums. Jeez, if he averages 95 from here, I would be extremely shocked.
In other words, we're both skeptical, but I think you kind of have to wait for an opportunistic trade, I guess.
Yeah, wait till he misses a week or do it around the buys or something like that.
Yeah, or Hooley. He scored 259s in a row. His break-even's 185. Like, he could crash through the floor in a few weeks and then could look to potentially trade there. All right, another question here about underperforming player Jesse Lonergan. Thoughts about him, Mark? Is it time for him to go? 60 and 64 his last two games.
I know some people held him last week, but and I know that you suggested to hold someone like that last week, like with my DeGoey, who ended up scoring 100. But I think last week was the time to get rid of him, and it was time to go down last week because there was those four rookie options. Like, I think that Lonergan to Dusty Byrne Jones or something like that this week is I probably wouldn't do that. It's just you're wasting a trade, and is Byrne Jones really going to make that much more money than Lonergan? I would have expected Lonergan to do better than he has, and I think that he should definitely be someone you're looking at trading out as soon as possible. So, if you can upgrade him, do it. And if you're confident to downgrade to someone like a Darcy Tucker, then do it. I'd be a little bit reluctant to do a Lonergan to one of the rookies that's already gone up in value.
Shane Berger has a question about Sam Gray and whether or not to trade him out. And we got quite a few other people asking about Gray. We ignored the question for a couple of weeks because I think we talked about him, you know, a few weeks ago, and nothing had much changed in our eyes. But he's then continued to score 51 and 45 in the last two rounds. So really, really quite poor. Now, considering that, is it time for him to finally go? He's already dropped 90K and his break even's 132.
Wow. Who would have thought that that would happen at the start of the year? And I could hear in your voice the smile when the mention of trading two Toby Green came up after he scored a 50 in round one and he just gunned it on the weekend. I mean, round one, Sam Gray looked really good, but with four scores below 80 in a row and a high break even, probably getting, a bit like Lonergan, it's probably getting very close to time to just cut your losses there and move on. Sometimes these mid prices or cheaper value premiums don't work out, and you've got to know when to get out, I guess. And because of his 99 in round one, I can see why, like, sticking around was probably the good idea, expecting him or hoping him to become good, and expecting and hoping Port to come good. But geez, they've been absolutely awful, and they would need a huge turnaround in form for Sam Gray to come good.
I would agree with you, Mark. Blair Dewsbury is another one that's asked about Toby Green. Now, just Toby Green in isolation, what are your thoughts on him? He's been brought up a few times after scoring a 129. Do you think he can keep up a premium average in the forward line, or it's just more fool's gold with this up and down roller coaster?
I mean, Toby Green's a gun. Definitely has the potential to have a really good average. And I think, I mean, I very strongly considered him in the preseason, but his form in the preseason was exactly the same. I think he scored like 121 game and then 70 the next. And my concern on the weekend was that he was playing very much as a small forward, and that's what he's been doing. He might get some possessions up around the middle, but his main role is actually a pressure, defensive, small forward. Kick a few goals and get a few possessions in the front half. So what we've actually seen with their game so far is that in their three wins out of five, he's scored over 100. And in their two losses, he's scored around 50. So from that perspective, you'd be really hoping that the GWS had a lot of wins this year. And you'd want to, like, maybe make him captain when you thought they were going to win and put him on the bench when you thought they were going to lose. From that perspective, it's really hard to predict. But I think that he should be a top 10 forward, which is a pretty good get at 450,000. Look, I think he's a reasonable pick this week. My main concern is the Giants' draw over the next 5 weeks. I don't think it's all that good.
I wouldn't quite describe his position as a small forward. I definitely agree. He plays out of the forward line, but it's definitely, I would call him a high forward because I saw him get quite a lot of link possessions on the wing and even as far back as the half back line when they were kicking out of defense. So I think that he's not as pigeonholed as to only get sort of score assist and goals. He will get the occasional cheap uncontested possessions, but having said that, I wouldn't recommend anybody else getting on this roller coaster. It's not been a pleasant ride so far. Like, it's worked out well after five rounds, but after the sixth round, like, I could be back looking at Toby Green going like, oh, what did I do? Why did I pick Toby Green? So I can't in good faith. I mean, he's only averaging 93 so far. 250s is definitely not what you want to be seeing from a player you're trading in. So I would be tentative.
I could personally bring in for Fife and Ben Kennedy, Selwood and Toby Green, and have considered it.
After 1 week of me leapfrogging you, I think you should copy my team from now on.
That I would just be bringing in your players. I did think about that, which is not really what I'm aiming to do, but I guess the rest of my team's better. So.
You can't say that anymore because I'm racked above you. Yeah. My team's better. Suck it. All right. Orazio Fantasia. We got questions about him because he scored 101 and he's not scored under 87 so far for the season. Faz mentioned him last week, but I think at 370,000, I wouldn't be recommending people trade him in. We have seen quite a lot of the chatter on Fantasia, but I personally wouldn't bring him in at that price point. I don't think he's a keeper. Yeah,
two weeks ago was the time to do it. Last week was your last chance.
Yep. All right. We'll move on from that. Last questions for the week are around potential rookie in. So we discussed the rookie outs earlier on. The leading question for this week is not actually about rookies on the bubble, but a rookie that we recommended last week that few people didn't quite jump on and now are having what is it, non-buyer's remorse. People don't have him a sort of pining for him, and considering how much he's gone up. Darcy Byrne-Jones, that's pretty impressive. He's gone up 83,000 in 1 week. He's now priced at 207,000, but after a score 103, people are still thinking about bringing him in. Now, that seems to me like too much money to be paying for somebody who could potentially stall and stay at 300,000. I mean, we picked him last week because he had the highest average by like 10 points or something. Like, we weren't that sold on him, but after a week at 210,000, it seems pretty risky to be considering bringing him in. Have things really changed that much?
I can understand why people do think about bringing him in, because he actually looked awesome. Like, Port were terrible, but Darcy Byrne-Jones, whenever there was a contested situation, he was getting in there, he'd get the ball out, and he'd get it out effectively every time. He honestly looked awesome. He was one of Port's best players by a mile, and he has done that 2 weeks in a row. So from that perspective, you would hope that he does stand out and keep his spot in that team for quite a while. From the other perspective, he is still pretty young in his third year, and he scoring could drop off very, very quickly, and could definitely go down, and he could put in a 30 this week. So I think that's scary enough, and he doesn't have quite the pedigree. I think that there are very, very few cases, but you might bring in a 200,000K rookie during the year, but they'd want to have a really good pedigree, like a Jacob Hopper, potentially, if he was actually going to play every week. I'm not sure that DBJ is that guy. But, I mean, like, if you followed our advice and went DBJ and Wagner last week, you'd be sitting pretty happily.
Yeah, Wagner also had a great game. He scored 86, so hope you guys were listening. Move on to the rookies who are actually on the bubble. Yeah. Tim's asked about Tom Lee, and there's also Liam Sumner, Jaden Hunt, and Timmy O'Brien. Thoughts on any of these blokes?
I don't like Hunt because I think that he's very much an impact player. I think he might keep his spot, but he's just a fast impact player. Sumner's scoring potential doesn't seem high enough. O'Brien has played a couple of pretty good games, but I don't like his job security. Out of those four, Tom Lee is probably the most interesting to me. He does have terrible disposal, but, I mean, St Kilda invested pretty heavily to get him to begin with, and he's been on their list for about 4 years, and I think he's like 25 now. So he does have the potential to hold his spot for a while, and for St Kilda to give him a run of 6 weeks and just say, hey, mate, see if you can get it done. So he does interest me a little bit. Personally, I'm looking to the future a little bit more, and I like Darcy Tucker from Freo as a defender, probably better than any of those guys. Forced his way into the Dockers team with 3 really good performances in the Waffle.
Overall, I agree with you about Tom Lee looking like the most solid of the four. Yeah, I think even if he doesn't play games consecutively, you'd still think he'd pitch in for games enough to be cashed in at some point across the season. A lot of people probably won't do a downgrade this week, though, I'm guessing. If you were to pick one downgrade option and you didn't want to bring in another backline player, would you choose between Sumner, Hunt, and O'Brien, or would you just like pick a Petrarca type instead who could be back as soon as this week?
Yeah, probably. I know that I'm going to need Petrarca at some point, but I'd probably pick Petrarca and hope someone better comes along soon. There are still a few rookies around, especially in the midfield, that might come through at some point. You've got Trengrove, Ben Keys, and Reece Matheson should all show their faces soon enough.
If Tim O'Brien manages to stay in the team this week, would you be tempted by him? I mean, job security is not superb, but the fact that he plays for Hawthorn should see him get some easier points than some of these other blokes. Play for St Kilda, Melbourne, and Carlton, all bottom teams.
Look, I guess it's not a terrible time to be bringing him in because, like, it's early in the year and you're going to be trading him out again. He's not someone that you're going to be keeping in your team all year, so you're not going to have to expect like long-term job security. You just need the next month or so. So from that perspective, O'Brien doesn't seem terrible.
I think he'd be the standout for me outside of Lee, so I'd be deciding between Lee and O'Brien this week. All right, so that wraps up this week, Mark. Feeling pretty good, obviously. So hopefully I can keep things up over this next week, Mark. Hopefully I get Crouch back in. Oh, my God. Missing Menzel for 2 weeks and Crouch for 2 weeks and still absolutely smash it. Wow, what a superb team you have, Marcus. Thanks. Thanks, Mark.
Do you know what the word anomaly means?
Don't jinx it, mate. Don't.
Everything will be back right in the world next week, hopefully. To be honest, I'm happy to see you back up there, mate. At least it makes it a bit competitive, and we're both sort of at the right end of the competition, and hopefully we both move up together.
Yeah, it would be good to see us both smashing up 2300s from here on out and be only 50 points away from each other, both in the top thou. That'd be much nicer than competing over who's not doing as badly in the tens of thousands mark. So fingers crossed we continue our way up the ladder.
I didn't quite expect to have such a big show this week. I know that we're sort of on the borderline of upgrade season, but if it wasn't for the Fife injury, then I think it would have been a fairly quiet show, I guess. But I think next week will be the first one where we're probably ready to cull some rookies and look for some upgrade targets and to get some money churning. And then we've sort of got a pretty intense 5 to 10 weeks after that of serious upgrading.
Yeah, round six tends to be the first round that you'd consider upgrading, downgrading. So it tends to be the early cash calls that happen this round, and that's definitely in line with what we're looking at, Menadue and Day and all blokes that haven't quite reached that peak. So I'd suggest you'd be right, Mark, and the decisions will get even more complex over the next few weeks. So thanks for joining us again for the show, Supercoach Coach community. We look forward to having you back with us next week. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars and give us a little bit of a review on iTunes if you have the time. And otherwise, you can find us at patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to donate to the show. So a massive thanks to you again, Mark, and we'll catch you next week.
See you, buddy.
See ya.